court will proceed to the sixth case of the day, Hall v. Forest River. Mr. Jordan.
May it please the court, Nathaniel Jordan on behalf of plaintiff appellant Shalee Hall. Shalee sued Forest River for retaliation, unlawful discrimination, both of those for the failure to be promoted to the position of auditor on August 26, 2002. And that was because she complained about sexual harassment. She also sued for constructive discharge, and through summary judgment, she lost her constructive discharge claim, but the other two claims stood the summary judgment test, and she proceeded on to trial. At the close of her evidence in trial, Forest River moved for judgment as a matter of law, and the court granted that on her retaliation claim. Her disparate treatment discrimination claim proceeded to a jury, which found against her. We had a final appealable order on June 21st, 2007. And we are here today asking the court to overturn the district court's decision as to the judgment as a matter of law against Shalee on her retaliation claim. We would ask that the court have this remanded for a new trial for a jury to test this claim. Now, Shalee was an inspector at Forest River. That's part of the quality control department. She was responsible for a production line to make sure that the recreational vehicles that were made met with the quality standards. The auditor position is the position in quality control above the inspector position, and that's what she wanted. The manager of the quality control department, his name is John Blair, and he was aware for a long time, during the time that she worked there, that she wanted that promotion. Now, Shalee began working for Forest River in January 2000, and she worked through November 2002 when she gave a two-week notice. She came back to Forest River after that in a different capacity, but this appeal doesn't concern that time. August 2002 is when, the 26th of that month, it's when another inspector with half the experience that Shalee had as an inspector was promoted to the position of auditor. And it was leading up to that, in the weeks before, that Shalee lodged complaints related to sexual harassment against her and also to another female at Forest River named Monica Horn. She lodged those complaints with the manager of her department, John Blair, and also with Jeffrey Rao for Human Resources at the request of John Blair. And this is what leads us really into the position that Shalee had at summary judgment, which is that she can proceed under the direct method of proof that's set forth in cases like Treadwell that talks about showing a causal connection between statutorily protected activity and an adverse action. And when you look at the causality here, when you look at the circumstantial evidence that surrounds it, we do have, first of all, suspicious timing. That's shown by the fact that August 16th, that's a Friday, sometime during that week, Shalee talked to John Blair for the first time to complain about this, and she said to Mr. Blair that she was going to support her fellow employee, Monica Horn, however Monica decided to proceed with her own claims against the company. And she talked with Blair at that point, and then talked with Blair again on August 22nd, talked with John Blair and also Jeffrey Rao on August 23rd. She talked with Jeffrey Rao on the 22nd as well. And we then have a payroll change notice dated August 23rd, making Leo Akins an auditor on August 26th. And that in conjunction with the fact that John Blair testified that he made the decision to promote Leo back at the beginning of August, as far as suspicious timing goes, should be something a jury should weigh. But moreover, Forest River also changed its position on when the promotion took place. Prior to litigation in front of the EEOC, Human Resources Director Jeffrey Rao wrote in writing, not once but twice in separate letters, that Leo Akins was promoted on August 26, 2002. In litigation at trial, with interrogatory answers, that response was revised. It was changed to late July, early August 2002, and a jury should consider this. A jury should also consider the fact that John Blair told Shalee when she was saying that she was going to support Monica Horn, he warned her not to stick her neck out for anybody. And a jury should also consider, there's plenty on the table for the jury, but one last item in terms of the direct method of proving causality is that John Blair was dishonest with Shalee about the auditor position and the promotion. back in March 2002. That was the last promotion to auditor before this one in August. And Shalee talked to John Blair at the time. He was forthcoming with her about who got the promotion, and he said, next time the position comes up, you'll be in the running, you won't be overlooked, and I'll let you know. Well, he didn't let her know. And in October 2002, she caught wind that maybe an auditor position was going to be opened up, not realizing one had been open and already was sealed. And so she talked to John Blair about it, and he told her that he had not made up his mind yet, and he was considering her. This was after the decision had been made and Leo was in place. And then through the rest of October, two or more times every week, Shalee would talk to him about this, and he would give the same answer. She only found out that Leo Akins had been promoted because she ran into Leo Akins and found out late October, early November, he had gotten the promotion. So a jury should weigh these issues as to causality. Now, if you look at Trial Rule 50 on its face, and I would say, too, that even it looks like the trial court below decided that Shalee was proceeding by the indirect method of proof and needed to show evidence related to competing qualifications that she did not show. We would submit that even if her claim has to go down that path, she submitted enough for a jury to weigh it. But the direct method is really her target. Now, with Trial Rule 50, the other thing that it instructs us on is that where you decide whether judgment as a matter of law will take away a claim, you ask, does the jury have a legally sufficient evidentiary basis to find for a party on the issue? Now, whether you look at this through the lens of the direct method or not, we do know the evidence that was presented at trial, and we know also the jury instruction that the jury was going to use to apply the law to the facts. Essentially, this instruction, it was set forth in the preliminary instructions, and it was going to be the same thing that would be set forth in final instructions, as it's the pattern instruction from the Seventh Circuit on the issue of retaliation. And it says, basically, jury, you're trying to decide retaliation. And if you decide that had Shalee not complained, but everything else had been the same, if she would have gotten the promotion in that case, then you should find retaliation. And so with that as our guiding principle, and with Trial Rule 50 that brings us there, there's certainly enough evidence for the jury to take that law, apply it to the evidence, and say, yes, we find retaliation. And with my white light on, I believe I'll save the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Ms. Godzecki.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. No matter what method you choose, no matter what method Judge Miller at the district court level applied, no matter whether it is the direct method using direct evidence or circumstantial evidence or the indirect method, no matter if it is the jury instruction, the result is still the same. And that is the plaintiff in this case failed to provide legally sufficient evidentiary support for her claim of retaliation, because she could not, and indeed she did not provide any evidence that she was as qualified or more qualified than Leo Akins, the man that Forest River promoted instead. That information is dispositive in this case, regardless of what framework we want to use. Before talking further about the arguments applied in this case, Your Honors, I do want to address Mr. Jordan's statement of the facts. He leaves out, of course, the important information that Ms. Hall concedes, that she couldn't say whether she was or as or better qualified than Mr. Akins. She conceded she didn't know anything about his qualifications or his background. He also, though, states that Forest River leaves out important information, or he left out important information on Forest River changing its position. There is evidence in the record and in our briefs about that. In addition, he claims that Mr. Blair was dishonest and changed his reasons for Ms. Hall's promotion or lack thereof. Importantly, he never said, I'll let you know. He did say, you'll be considered, but he never said, I'll let you know. He never made that promise to her. Back to the issue, Your Honors, about the qualifications of Ms. Hall. Logic requires that in order for a plaintiff to make a claim for retaliation, that she wasn't promoted because she engaged in this protected activity, that she must at some level have been entitled to that position. She certainly cannot claim retaliation if she wasn't entitled or qualified for the position in the first place. That, of course, is inconsistent with the goals and the purposes of Title VII. Title VII, its anti-discrimination and its anti-retaliation provisions, are to protect people, to make sure they are treated equally. It is not to put them in a better position. If a company says, I am going to promote someone more qualified, surely that is not retaliation for another individual. Forest River is not aware of a single case in this circuit, or indeed any circuit, where the person who was less qualified prevailed in a Title VII retaliatory failure to promote case. Moreover, there is no authority for the proposition that the plaintiff makes that a prima facie element of relative qualifications doesn't apply to retaliation claims, because it is illogical. Judge Miller, of course, got it right. Looking at the prima facie case under the direct and the indirect method, the court can take significant guidance from the decisions in Millbrook, in Grayson, and in the Johnson v. Nordstrom case. All of those look at qualifications in the context of a failure to promote. But even applying the direct analysis that Mr. Jordan posits, first of all, you must have a protected activity. Second, an adverse action. And third, the causal connection. Where an individual cannot demonstrate that she is as or better qualified than the individual who is promoted, that causation link is broken. There is no causal connection. Even those cases that evaluate the direct evidence method or the direct method of retaliation look to whether there is an explanation from an employer that can be rebutted. Ms. Hall, in this case, did not rebut the employer's explanation for its decision that it hired and promoted Mr. Akins because he was better qualified.
He tries to raise this one issue about one of the people, I forget which name, says she shouldn't stick her neck out, as if that's, I don't know whether that, they're trying to say that's a fact question because it could have been a threat or as opposed to just sage advice. Maybe you could address that. That seems to be one hook she's trying to say. I guess it would be under the direct method of the circumstantial evidence.
Your Honor, the direct method of circumstantial evidence in the context of the discussion that you're talking about isn't enough to overcome the lack of the qualifications. Even if he said, don't stick your neck out, whether it be sage or some sort of a threat, doesn't get to the ultimate question that she cannot rebut Forest River's decision to promote someone who is more qualified. Mr. Akins demonstrated, the evidence demonstrates that Mr. Akins was more qualified because he was a self-starter, he was a leader, he had more experience in management. Even the EEOC in its determination letter, which is a form of objective, non-interested evidence, shows that Ms. Hall was not as qualified as the other individuals who were promoted to auditor. I can address that particular question because I know that Mr. Blair, Your Honor, did not recall saying those terms, and the only evidence about him saying, don't stick your neck out, was from the plaintiff herself and was uncorroborated. If we use the indirect method, which is typically something that tends to give plaintiffs more opportunities to demonstrate their case, one must demonstrate protected activity and adverse action, and that, of course, similarly situated employees who are not in the protected class were treated equally. Even assuming that the element of the protected activity and the adverse action are met, Leo Akins was not similarly situated because he was better qualified, and she did not have any evidence whatsoever to demonstrate that he wasn't. And even assuming that he was similarly situated, We move to a pretext analysis, and there is no evidence that was presented on the record demonstrating that Mr. Akins was not better qualified or that Forest River didn't believe that he was better qualified. In both methods, this court has evaluated the issue of pretext after the employer has put forth the legitimate non-retaliatory reasons for the action. And Stone versus the City of Indianapolis, the case that gave us these different ways of evaluating the retaliation cases, says that unrebutted evidence of a non-invidious, non-discriminatory reasons justifies judgment for the employer. These facts are unrebutted, and in fact, she conceded those facts. We spend a little bit of time in the briefing, Your Honor, and Mr. Jordan referenced it in his first statement to the court here about the Rule 50 analysis. The standard that Judge Miller applied, similar to that applied in a summary judgment context, was right. The notion that he can't, or any district judge can't, before a case goes to a jury, cannot apply an analysis that evaluates the prima facie elements of a case is simply wrong. And we can rely upon Supreme Court authority in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing and in the St. Mary's Honor Center case versus Hicks. They provide clear guidance on what actually drops from the picture in the standard discrimination or retaliation claims. And Reeves tells us definitively that a Rule 50A motion mirrors the standard on that applied to a motion for summary judgment. This, of course, is more fully outlined in the brief, but in summary, the court has said after a prima facie case has been established, after the defendant has articulated the legitimate reason for its action, then the presumption of discrimination drops from the picture. It doesn't make the prima facie case irrelevant or the matter of the qualifications of the individual. And even if you were to require lower courts to analyze these cases according to the jury instructions, that is, that Forest River would have promoted the plaintiff if she had not engaged in protected activity, but everything was the same, when you evaluate the qualifications, the answer must be no. No matter how it's framed, whether indirect or direct, Ms. Hall was not qualified. She had experience as an inspector, but that wasn't enough. She didn't say she had experience as an auditor or as a manager or running a company or had the requisite people skills. She admits that she was counseled on a number of those things, and she conceded that she couldn't say anything about her qualifications in comparison to Mr. Akins. She still has to prove she was better qualified than he was, and she couldn't. Forest River asked this court to affirm the judgment on behalf of Forest River. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to say, as to a factual matter, that on appendix page 33, page 252 of the transcript testimony, Shalee did testify that John Blair said that he would let her know about the next auditor position. Now, in terms of the and for credibility, of course, wherever we have credibility issues, this is fodder for the jury, not for judgment as a matter of law. In terms of qualifications, now that if we look at Treadwell and other cases that have shown us how we evaluate the direct method of proof for retaliation, competing qualifications is not an element of that. We don't need to go there. We don't need to address that element to get to the jury under the direct method of proof. And I would point out, too, that in this case, the defense did not put on its own case. There was no rebuttal evidence presented after that. So this motion for judgment of law fell before all of that. But even if you do look at the indirect method of proof and the qualifications element, Shalee presented the fact that if you look at the documents in the record, she had 32 months of experience versus Leo Akin's 16 months of experience at the time of the promotion. That comes from the EEOC letters. And Forest River hired mostly from the inspector ranks to become auditors. So she trumped him there. She had positive written evaluations. In fact, John Blair had written on a payroll increase back in May of that year. He said, doing a great job. He testified at trial that she was an excellent worker, and her plant manager said she did a good job. She doesn't have negative written evaluations against her, and she did testify when asked at trial that she believed she was as qualified as Leo Akins for the position. The fact that Forest River has John Blair talk about Leo Akins' soft skills, soft skills can be a legitimate reason to promote somebody, but it always has a self-serving ring. This is something that we should let a jury test, especially in light of the fact that Blair's credibility is already called into question. And so for these reasons, we would ask that you give Shalee another chance. We're just asking that a jury be able to weigh her claims.
Thank you, Jordan. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.